afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics, like mercury, PFAS, pesticides, are playing in our daily lives. What do you think Mother Earth would make of all this? My guest today is Laureen Allen. I recently saw examples of her heroic advocacy work that she's been doing in Merrimack, New Hampshire, on a documentary film called Bad Water, Small Town, Deaf Ears, that was created in 2019. It examines how four different small towns rallied to deal with PFAS discoveries in their water. PFAS is a class of thousands of specific chemicals that never really break down. They've been around for decades, but our knowledge about their horrors is really just emerging now. You can see this film on YouTube, and I will put a link to Bad Water, Small Town, Deaf Ears in the show notes and on What Mama Wants Facebook page. Laureen, thank you for coming on What Mama Wants today.
You're welcome.
After you learned in 2016 that PFAS had been found in Merrimack, New Hampshire's drinking water, you co-founded a group called Merrimack Citizens for Clean Water. What's your town of 26,000 people thinking about PFAS these days?
Well, in 2016, you know, we learned that the water that we believed to be safe for many, many years, the state estimated at least 15 to 20 years of exposure through this chemical class, the water was not safe. These are odorless, tasteless chemicals, and they're highly toxic. At that point, there wasn't much information. The guidance from the federal government was nil. All we heard was these were emerging contaminants and not much is known. So residents who were looking around and comparing notes and had health concerns were doing Google searches. They were talking to each other because they weren't getting any answers at all about their exposure and what this means to them. And we started talking on social media and people found each other. I'm a clinical social worker, so my instinct is to go in and facilitate and help people. So I use some of my skill set to say, all right, let's meet a couple times a month. Let's support each other, first of all, because this is very stressful. Our water had the best tasting water in New Hampshire award for many, many years.
So ironic.
It's really ironic. So, you know, groundwater, well water in an area that it's a beautiful area. You know, streams, brooks, conservation land, rivers, mountains, greenery. Maple syrup is made in town. There's beekeepers in town.
It's so idyllic, but it's like it's haunted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's surreal. You know, you look around and you say, wow, do I need to get out of here? And then you say, no, I love it here. It's wonderful. Everything is just right. People move to this area for just that. They believe they have safety, a clean environment, and it's a good life for them and their families and a good sense of community. So people need people. That's really what this is all about, because how do you survive something like this? If you hear this news individually, people did move. People did become stressed. A lot of people denied the problem and said, I don't think it's a problem and I'm fine. And they just shut it down. And humans do that. Humans do that. So myself as a social worker, there was another community member who was actually an IT person. There was someone else who was a retired nurse, someone who worked in water systems, small systems design. We had this group of people and we looked at their careers and their backgrounds. And together, you know, we started meeting on a regular basis. So when you find out that you've been drinking water that you believe to be safe, we found each other and we looked at problem consensus, first of all. What we realized in our community, and this is the case everywhere, is when you have a community, you have a town manager and you have either a board of selectmen or we have a town council. Same difference, because who they are is community members who are elected. They're committed to keeping their town, you know, running, and they want, in most cases, to preserve life the way they think it should be. There's a little tension over what that looks like in every community, but nonetheless, they're well-intended. What in life prepared them for this? They're busy doing the budget and hearing municipal things and the whole bit and their own agenda. So they're not quick to say there's a problem because they also represent the interests of the town. Towns often supply water, or town has a separate municipality. It's called Merrimack Village District. So it runs separately from the town, but it is voted and it answers to the people. So we have the town council, we have the Merrimack Village District, and we have our Department of Public Works, which runs the wastewater facility. PFAS is water, right? Water, if it comes into your home and goes down the drain, it goes into the sanitary sewer, or if you have septic systems, as I do, it goes into the ground and it ends up in the brook behind my house. So PFAS is astonishing. You know, the cycle and the pathways are never ending. So there's all these pieces there. We have landfills that are there in towns, and over the years, carpets and consumer products have been put there. Any landfill anywhere, if they do some groundwater testing, will find PFAS. There's also vapors in the air. So to back up a bit, there is a facility in my town called Saint-Gobain. And Saint-Gobain was, they acquired a company called Chemfab back in 2000. And Chemfab's claim to fame was the Millennial Dome and this high-performance fabric that also is at the Denver Broncos Stadium and the Denver Airport and those radomes that cover satellites that you see, those big white domes. So this is a high-tech fabric that has a lot of parts to it, fiberglass, and it's coated with something called PTFE. So this is important for people to pay attention. As everyone hears PFAS, 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 when you look for consumer products that are safe and they say PFAS-free, you need to ask, and everyone needs to ask, does it contain PTFE? What is it? PTFE is Teflon. PTFE right now is being kind of carved out very cleverly by industry to not count as PFAS. It's PFAS. So our polluter uses PTFE. They coat fabric, they run it up these towers, and they cook it. And the emissions go out in the air, and the air particulate has traveled for miles, not just Merrimack, at least five surrounding communities. And the state has definitively stated that the air emissions are the reason that the ground and the soil and the groundwater became contaminated.
How horrifying
it is
to realize how ubiquitous it is. And like water, it moves with it and air.
Yes.
So it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's quite defeating to figure out how to protect oneself.
Especially when we look at a regulatory situation. So regulatory, every state is different, and New Hampshire defers to federal for various types of permitting. So this particular facility, as many manufacturing facilities in New Hampshire and New England, sits very close to the river. The Merrimack River is a vast river. So they can legally, at this point, discharge into the waterways. And they call this non-contact cooling liquid is what their permit is for. It's been tested by the state of New Hampshire. It has insane amounts of PFAS, not just PFOA, which the focus is kept on with Teflon, but this slew. There's 14 to 16 different ones, parts in the thousands. It's just appalling. So into the waterways it goes, where it becomes drinking water for south of us, into Massachusetts and things like that. And what about the fish and the wildlife and people who, you know, recreate on the river and things like that? So we have the river impacts, we have stream impacts, we have air deposition, we have soil, we have biosolids and compost that are made by wastewater facilities that go out all over New England as Class A food grade biosolids. Yikes, think about that. So without acknowledgement of this chemical class is toxic, which it is, without designation as hazardous substances, which is in the works, and without true federal advisories and leadership, it's up to the states. And if you look at the map of states all over the nation, many states have taken action. They've had to go up there and recreate the science so they can defend this legally. And New Hampshire did this and come up with standards for maximum contaminant levels for these chemicals, which for PFOA, for example, is 12 parts per trillion. Parts per trillion, you know, that's minuscule.
That's nothing. Just dismiss it. Parts yeah. per trillion.
And this is one. This is PFOA, which mm-hmm. is no longer made. And yet it still shows up coming out of this facility in an active way because chemistry is interesting. The new formulations immediately turn to PFOA once they come out those air stacks. So we're still being exposed. And there's a whole slew. There's a whole slew of them. And everyone studied. There isn't a safe one out there. There is no substitute in this chemical class, within the chemical class.
When I think of the chemical class, I think of maybe an analogy to fruits. If you just say fruits, but there are so many different kinds of fruits. Yes. So if you do a test and one number is high, mm-hmm. we get a lot of apples. Don't forget, you also have an orange, a grape, some kiwis.
Yes.
And it all adds up. It's a big bowl of fruit.
You're right. If you're counting calories or doing Weight Watcher points, you know, you're going to say, I ate a large bowl of fruit salad. Right. You aren't going to say, oh, I ate an apple and apple seeds could contain arsenic. I better watch apples, right? No, that's absolutely ridiculous. Think of PCBs, right? At some point in the history of this nation, we regulated and addressed PCBs as a class. PFAS needs to be addressed as a class. You can test for it with total organic fluorines. If you find fluorines, PFAS is there. You don't have to spend millions and billions of dollars deciding which ones are good, which ones are bad, well, how much of this, how much of that.
Who wants us to be spending millions and billions of dollars to chase after each individual chemical?
We are, but we are.
Who wants that, though?
Immense amounts of money have been wasted there, and that money could be better spent stopping the source. That's what we have to do. We have to stop the source. So we are a really great case study because we know the source. We know what they're doing. We know what they've done. We know that they've been under corrective action since 2001 to lower. And this is the problem. If the work plan is to reduce but not eliminate, and these are chemicals that are toxic, they bioaccumulate in our bodies and the environment, they never go away. And we are significantly disrupted when we ingest them. So what good does it do to reduce them, especially in a community for miles where you've had long-term exposure? So people are all in agreement that this source needs to be stopped, and yet they have more rights than we do. They can't be stopped.
Yet if I ran Saint Gobain, I also have children. I also have neighbors and friends and a relationship with the earth. Why wouldn't I want to stop it too?
Absolutely. Right. I think everyone needs to do this. And I, in summer of 2017, went to a conference in Boston, and I met many people across the nation who were fighting similar battles in their communities, who did not set out to be, all of a sudden, were called activists, you know? And activists in New Hampshire, in my town, almost, it was almost a bad word. Oh, you're an activist. You know, oh, you're a fear monger. You want to scare us for political gain. So I had to go out there, and I did. I like people. I practice clinically in New Hampshire, and I work with folks from all kinds of backgrounds, and that's perfectly fine. But I realized in the beginning, wait a minute, why is this a political issue? This should not be political. If you think it's a problem, you know, you're a fear monger and you're all kinds of other names. But if you say, it's fine, you know, no problem, you're sensible. That didn't make sense to me. So I started having coffee after coffee after coffee with every person who was in a elected capacity who really didn't believe this was a problem. Water commissioners, town councilors, members at large in the community who were very vocal about their feelings that they didn't think this was a problem. And giving them information that I had learned and saying, what do you think about this? Well, did you know? One of the things I said to all of them in the beginning is, please don't tell people when they call your department or talk to you as a neighbor that they're safe. There are no safe levels. You can say we are in compliance with the current law. You can say this is an evolving area, but you really should be telling people to protect themselves. And if you're unwilling to do that, at least don't say the word safe. It will bite you. You will be sued. And that all came to pass.
Wow. I love that you were willing to go out and have individual conversations with all kinds of people. We do kind of, especially being led into such a, I don't know, kind of an ugly zoo of chemicals. You need someone to take your hand and say, come on, I'll walk you through the zoo and take a look at this. It's not what you think it is.
It's real easy also in this climate that we live in, not just the environmental climate, but the political and people climate. That's greatly shifted. So people have this tendency that really bothers me now that they say, you don't think how I think, so I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to friend you on Facebook. I'm not going to acknowledge you at the gas station, and you're going to make me angry, and I don't want to fight you, so basically you don't exist in my world. So when I started reaching out to some people who had been very active in town politics for many, many years, a lot of older folks who had been doing their part many, many years, and they were getting a lot of their information as elected officials and representatives at that point from industry. And I had no idea, even in New Hampshire, how powerful lobbyists are that represent industry interests. We hear this all the time, but we think that's in DC or some city. It's in my town, in my small town. And I said, where are you getting your information? And then I looked at state presentation slides from May of 2016 in our hour of need, where we're saying to the state, Department of Health and Human Services, What does this mean to us? They're putting up this slide saying there's no human studies, there's nothing, there's no proof. And I'm looking at the slides and I'm saying, what about this thing called the C8 study that had 70 to 80,000 participants? That looks like valid science to me. And many people have seen that story in the Dark Waters movie. Thank goodness they made that. That has helped immensely. So I'm looking and I'm hearing this huge difference between what I'm learning and what I'm hearing from who I expect to be guiding us by the mandate and description of their jobs. And then I realize in the very bottom right corner of their slides is this little logo. I go home, I look at the slides, I blow it up because I said, that's not the state seal. What is that? It was the 3M logo. 3M is the original manufacturer of PFOA. I didn't know we had a 3M facility in New Hampshire. They don't manufacture the chemicals there. They make products, but wow. So 3M stepped up at some point. I would love to know what happened behind closed doors. Did they say to the state, hey, we know a lot about these chemicals. Let us help you. And the state said, sure, thanks. Did the state turn to them? How were those slides given to them by a complete conflict of interest? No wonder they denied all the science that's there. Anyone can Google PFOA, PFAS, any one of these little acronyms, any initial that you come across, PFOS, and whatever health condition you may be concerned about, you will find studies and people can judge for themselves. So that's both validating and horrifying. Right?
Yes.
It means there's something out there that can kill people and harm people and alter reproductive health and endocrine and metabolic and cardiovascular and osteoarthritic and neurodevelopment. It goes on and on and on. And it's not acknowledged. Why? Because corporate America doesn't want it to be acknowledged because the liability is immense.
But everyone who saw those slides at some level saw the little 3M on the corner, whether they registered that or not. But you took it home and really looked. And that's why you get the amazing advocate award, even though you didn't plan to be the advocate. That kind of deep dive, that setting your life aside to go do this investigative questioning, you've protected a lot of people. You've helped the city of Merrimack see that they can't say safe. It's not safe. They're not safe.
Right. And problem consensus did happen in our community. It took some time. And it took meeting with people who shook their fingers in my face originally and said, you know, don't say the word contamination. It's inflammatory language. And really did call us fearmongers and quote the crazy ladies and many things. And instead of saying, hey, that really is impacting me emotionally and I'm going to stay away from you because this is not good for my mental health, I said, you know what? They don't have the right information. Come have a coffee with me. I took a lot of heat from people who were very informed who said, why are you meeting with that person? They're never going to see it. And they were really upset with me at one point. And I said, because we have to educate people because they are impacted. And this is about people. We can't say, you know, okay, you choose to be in denial, then oh well. I mean, you aren't going to shift everybody. You really aren't.
No, you can't. But you're walking the talk. This is what is all over the media. How do the two sides sit down together and find common ground? And you've just made that happen personally, one-on-one in your town.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
Politics is a game in New Hampshire. It's a sport. And what I found is, oh my gosh, you know, I held this meeting at one point and I said, let's get all the electeds from both parties and all, you know, the stakeholders, as I say. The state stakeholder analysis really doesn't include people. And we've worked hard federally and in every state with the National PFAS Contamination Coalition to have, as we say, a seat at the table. And we have a seat at the table at this point. And we've done great things together getting that. But in my town, when I tried to hold meetings, bringing together, for example, the school board and the town council and the conservation commission, the Merrimack Village District, and our elected officials of both parties, I had people calling me going, well, this person's going to be there and I'm not prepared because I can't stand them. And getting people together. When I finally did, and I looked at the room, I was astonished. It was the town council conference room, and it was a big room, and where people sat was pretty telling. And some positioned themselves in ways where they wouldn't have to look at another person at all. And they all looked at me and I thought, oh my gosh, this is group therapy. This is my complex family work. But you know, I do love people and I think we have to be patient with each other. And it's about problem consensus. And that step is skipped in many communities. And that really needs, we need to step back and really say, let's get the information, let's bring it to people, and then they can read it and they can have that information and we can all be speaking in the same language, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's great that you can use your family therapy skills to work on the family of politicians.
Absolutely. This isn't about opinions, and this isn't about where you get your information and your news source. This is about something that affects everyone, everyone in the nation.
Mm-hmm. The problem that you found in Merrimack really exceeded the scope you could have originally imagined. And so you became a co-founder of the National PFAS Contamination Coalition, which you have alluded to, which helped people to learn to organize to protect themselves, not just in your community, but across the whole state and country. And that is so powerful. How can other towns that find that they have a sudden PFAS problem that's been brewing for 50 years, how can they connect with this coalition?
Yeah, the National PFAS Contamination Coalition has a Facebook group, and we have a website. And on that website, it will say about us. There's a short video. There's a, right on the front, I believe there's a 21-point letter that was presented to the Biden administration when they were in transition. It was presented to the previous administration also, that really nails what we need for federal change that impacts every impacted population, be it firefighters, Department of Defense, industry, you know, in any way, shape, or form. And you can see what we're about there. And some of it may look a little technical, but overall, there's a video about who we are, and there is links on there in the About Us that you can join as a grassroots member. So you don't have to be a group. You can be a person who cares. You can start a group in your community. Either way, you can also join as what we call an ally. And an ally is a group that is more of a nonprofit or a science or academic partner who says, yes, I have skills and I stand beside you and I want to work together with you. We have allies across the nation that are just wonderful, wonderful.
Well, no town wants to find out that they have a PFAS problem. What a boon to find out that if you do, some people have already built a network and you can join in and find out quickly and have people to walk the walk with and to show you the way.
That's a really good point, because in 2016, this was uncharted territory. For 2 years, 2.5 years, the stress levels from people were so high because we were creating this and we were all victims. We were all injured and we were trying to find our way together, and a lot of emotion and a lot of shaping the landscape. At this point, more and more people are waking up to find this is a problem. As we test more, this fall kicks off another round of national testing. More and more people are discovering this is a problem. If you test, you will find it. The good news is when you find this out now, you can find this coalition, you can find other groups. Even if you don't want to join the coalition, you can look up and find someone in your geographical area. Reach out. Will keep your sanity, at least you'll have some support, and get some sense of what do I do, where do I start, what did you guys do, and that support system is there. So there's a roadmap. There's a roadmap that's been created. Even federally, I've worked with the CDC and ATSDR to create a community support playbook and a stress and resiliency center that is to really tune into communities so they don't have the bad experience that we did. We're asking for help and people are angry, frustrated, and walking away, and they just feel that something's not right and it was not satisfying. That's what really brought me into this, is watching person after person go up to a microphone. Older people self-disclosing things that they don't talk about, private things about their health conditions and their family, hearing these stories and watching the response that wasn't even really apologetic. Well, we really can't say, we really don't know. Not acceptable, not acceptable. When someone discloses a trauma to you, you can't just say, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about it. The support wasn't there. I think that's really, really what drew me in the beginning. I just kind of said to myself, this is not okay. And people can't just walk away and go home feeling like they're feeling. And I know how I'm feeling. So how is everybody else feeling?
You have a big protection gene, I think. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to realize that there's been a terrible discovery, that something's ruined the water in your town. And it's a whole other thing to realize that the people who were doing it knew that they were doing it all along. Some place like a factory in your town called St. Gobain is polluting the community's water with toxic PFAS chemicals, yet they seem to have a somewhat protected status. What's happening there?
They do have a protected status. Way back in the beginning, somehow DuPont and 3M were able to finagle getting these chemicals approved, and they got them through the EPA. And the government is in a little bit of a sticky situation now. So how do you go back when you approved chemicals and say, oh, by the way, you know, they should never have been approved? So there's a lot of liability and legal issues behind the scenes, and the states left on their own have to find the science to support them. That's why the focus is on what we call legacy chemicals, PFOA and PFOS, which are older ones. They're still out there, but basically they've been, quote, voluntary discontinued. So, you know, that protects liability, and it's a little bit of a dance. They're protecting, you know, their current stream big time, and it's all the same. And they are, I find this corporation, I've met with them, I've had group meetings with them, we've reached out to them, and there's arrogance, and there is this, they know they're untouchable. They looked me in the eye at one point, and they said, I gave some information, and I gave some, we're getting this information. Well, this is from North Carolina consent agreement with Chamois, who is the maker of one of your formulations. They didn't say anything, but I know that's the maker. I have definitive proof of that. And this is from this information, pause. Well, you must agree what we're doing is perfectly legal. That was the answer I got.
Wow.
And I said, for now, I looked them in the eye. So I, at that moment, said, I will not rest. I will spend the rest of my years doing what I can without burning myself out. So this is beyond a David and Goliath story. I've had to learn about federal policy and all these acronyms over toxic release inventory, TRA, a SNR. You know, what's a SNR? I was like, a sudden new use rule. Yes, I got it right. SNR. So there's all these, there's this PPC something that's the pollution control. There are so many acronyms out there. So I had to go and learn who does what. What does the EPA do? What do they really do? What does Congress do? What do committees and subcommittees do? Who's in charge here? What I found is, wow, this nation is really set up to fail us. It needs restructured. And I was astonished. The more I delved into how things really get decided upon and what happens. And we all hear this. Corporate America has more rights than we do. So what we have to do is change the laws and get ourselves some rights. That's basically what we need to do.
Can I get an amen? I think you should also get an honorary PhD from Merrimack University.
I feel that sometimes. Sometimes I say, my gosh, I feel like I meet science and academia people and they go, oh, so they realize that I can talk their language. So they start getting into the weeds and talking really freely. And they like that because they get to unload what's in their head for 10, 15, 20 years. And then I realize there are people out there who have known the harm for a long time and they haven't been able to do anything about it. So in the field of my work, I do a lot of work with trauma. In trauma, there is a saying, you can be a victim or you can be a survivor. And how do you become a survivor? You need to step back and you need to build strength and supports and ground yourself and do your own self-care and teach yourself, you know, with the help of others. So this is kind of a trauma story. It really, really is. You know, this is how we survive. When I meet people across the nation and I hear of the stories, they're horrifying. The losses, the cancers, the things that can make you so angry, they can also scare you. I've heard grown men who have served in the military who are amazing, strong leaders, you know, their voices shake and quake, you know, and they're talking to me. And I just talked to someone last week and he had to stop and take a few breaths several times in our conversation. And he said what a lot of these big, strong heroes are saying, I'm scared. It's not a matter of what is going to get me. It's a matter of when it's going to get me. They really, truly believe. They watch their colleagues in firefighting and DOD and things like this. The Department of Defense contracts with Saint-Gobain. Saint-Gobain has billions of dollars in DOD contracts with something called mil-specs. So mil-specs is you make it to military specification. So the DOD has a huge part in this. And if we wonder what's going on, it's industry, it's branches of government, and it's immense profits, and it's liability. If they acknowledge the problem, they have to own it.
It sounds so much like family therapy.
Thank you. It really is. You know, whose problem is it, right? Mm-hmm. When people call me and they say, hey, we have this kid and we need them fixed, basically. I mean, not so simple, but in the nutshell. And I listen, I ask a couple questions. I say, well, who's this affecting? Well, it's affecting everybody, of course. Then I need you all to come in. They say, well, why do we need to come in? This kid is the one with these behaviors. Children and teens, their behaviors really do communicate what's going on in the health of the family system. So when you tune into the family system, instead of symptom reduction, right, that's a Band-Aid cure, you can really help that family become healthy. And that is the type of work I do. Some therapists do individual work. I do. If I have one person in front of me, the whole family is in the room. They're just not physically there. That is how I think. That is the work that I do. And I find it effective. It's the same with PFAS. It really is.
Except you're the teenager.
Yes. Yes, I know. It's crazy.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Lorene Allen, co-founder of the local group Merrimack Citizens for Clean Water and the advocacy group called National PFAS Contamination Coalition. Lorene, you've been unafraid to tackle this huge PFAS project with so many moving parts, holding the corporate chemical polluters and the New Hampshire policymakers to account. In this process, you've seen people suffering in a town that's known that they have toxics in their water since 2016. What is it like for the people living in the community year after year? You've alluded to the ongoing stresses. I'm wondering about what they do when they realize they have these exposures. What kind of strategies do you offer in dealing with the problem of this living in fear of disease when industry has a bigger seat at the table than the citizens do?
I love that question, because what we've needed from the start is guidance, and that is appalling that we haven't had it, right? So people have gone out there to find resources and advocated for physician support, physician guidance, physician education. This coming week, there is going to be a great announcement on July 28th, I believe it is, from the National, let's get it right, NASEM, another acronym, National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. Yes, that's it. I never heard of them, right? They are the be-all, end-all. So the government had so much pressure in the last administration that the CDC could only accomplish so much. So they basically commissioned them to go out there and make recommendations on physician guidance. Unfortunately, the scope of their directives was way too narrow, and they know that. So what they did is they started this immense process, and they looked for what they called citizen liaisons, because that was a big ask there. And the CDC knew they needed to hear from us, because the CDC can only do so much at that point. Academics, scientists, and citizen community liaisons. So several people nominated me, so I became one, honored to serve many people from across the country. I'm so proud of everybody. It was all videotaped. It's on their website. And some of what we said, it was beyond the scope, but it was what's needed. And they quickly realized what's needed is beyond the narrow scope. So that's coming out. Physician advisories by the CDC are not comprehensive enough, but Silent Spring Institute has one that's pretty good, and there are some links. So what I do, and I encourage people to do, is share these physician fact sheets and share these advices. It comes down to screening. So if you have a child who's in a PFAS-impacted community, kids don't get blood work unless they are really unhealthy. But in general, they need thyroid screenings and they need cholesterol screenings. And when you look at those things, you're going to find something in many cases. In the line of work that I do, kids will come in sometimes very dysregulated, and you could easily go to a mood disorder and diagnose them and send them for psychiatric medication. I, weirdly enough, in my work, always look first at the biology. My training is what we call biopsychosocial. So first, the biology. So I'm always saying to people, well, let's look at vitamin D and iron and anemia, and let's screen the thyroid, because that all looks like depression. It looks like bipolar disorder in adults. It looks like anxiety. It looks like ADHD. You can have heart irregularities and beats can be all over the place. If you do a comprehensive screening and you find you have a dysregulated thyroid, you're not going to be put on a mood stabilizer. So there you go, right? I mean, it's better to find out what's going on.
Turns out our brains and our emotions are housed in our bodies.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Of course, I'm just delighted to hear your approach on that.
It's, yeah,
we jump to feelings,
right,
and mood too quickly. There are things that create those feelings.
Absolutely.
And moods.
The lymph system, for example, we have to look at our body. Unfortunately, with PFAS, the body doesn't easily excrete them, but we can support the body. We can support our immune system. We can have good blood work. I find over and over and over people with horrible vitamin D levels, like mine was 15 when I had it tested a few years back. That's critically low. I don't, you know, it's really puzzling. Thyroid, parathyroid, lots and lots of things. Even you wouldn't look at children who are fit and healthy and look great and suspect that they had issues with cholesterol, or young boys that look perfectly fine. Who's going to do a screening of testosterone levels and find surprisingly low testosterone levels? What does that mean as they get older? Is that going to put them at a higher risk rate for cancers? Potentially, it could. So you need to screen, and physicians are being educated by people who bring them these fact sheets. So that empowers people. So there are things we can do, listening and saying, I get it. That's very validating to people. So validation is very powerful to people, and they feel better just by someone hearing them and acknowledging them. And it's amazing. What did it change? It didn't change what you hear about what's going on in their family and their neighborhood, but they say thank you and they feel better. And people asking about what to do, should they drink the water? They still ask that in my town. And I tell people over and over and over, wherever you are in this day and age, a $200 reverse osmosis dedicated faucet in your kitchen. Use that, fill up whatever you want to fill up and drink water. Don't just load yourself with plastics. And you know, what are we going to do? You know, in Merrimack, there's a mountain of plastics that we are accumulating by people who are given bottled water by the state because their private wells are deemed not safe. And they get these immense deliveries once a month of big 5-gallon jugs and the smaller bottles. And I look at this and I say, where is this going? Yeah. It's going to the incinerator.
And the toxics in the plastic leach right into the water
you
drink.
Absolutely. I was, you know, growing up, I don't know, I grew up in Massachusetts and I remember W.R. Grace. I remember reading about it in the Boston Globe. And I, you know, somewhere at a yard sale when I was very young, came across a copy of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. The title was kind of cool. And I said, oh, I'm going to buy this book for 5 cents. So I bought it for myself and I went home and I read it. And I was like, whoa. That book has been my side my whole life.
Rachel Carson's your surrogate mom.
I raise my children on books like that.
Wow.
They're very aware. We need to protect our environment. We are part of this ecosystem.
Well, that leads me to my favorite question. What do you think Mother Earth wants from us regard to clean water and toxics?
We know this. You know, we know that the tribal indigenous people have been speaking to us for a long time. They're watching and nodding and they're hoping, okay, guys, I look at what's going on with climate, with the earth, with shifts in species, with weird things that we see in animals and amphibians again, you know, and people are morphing. And I'm thinking, okay, clearly, we are not getting the message. And when we don't get the message, the universe has a way of taking care of it, you know, and the universe is going, all right, I got to up the ante and try to get your attention and make things more severe. We need to pay attention.
Yeah. So you think Mama Earth would say, pay attention?
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is the planet that we live on. There is only one Earth. You know, that movie Upload or whatever it was called, where they zoomed off to another planet at the end. That was kind of funny. And then they all died. It served them right. We can't just shoot everybody into SpaceX and go off and, you know, the rich will find a new planet.
Can we shoot a few people off into SpaceX?
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. Because, come on, take care of this. Look around, everyone. Look around what we have. It's such a gift every day, right? Protect it.
Absolutely. To close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions just about your personal relationship with the sweet earth that we're spinning on. As a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outside in nature?
Just to be outside, sit in a tree. I had this phenomenal tree with this big wide branch, and you could go up there and lean on this other branch and read a book and feel the breeze and just be up there, be with the birds. You know, anything outside. Someone asked me years ago, where do you feel the best? And I say outside with bare feet and my feet on the ground, grounded, connected, water, dirt.
That's cool. Can you describe a scene in nature where you have felt awe?
Oh, every day. You wake up every day and the sun is coming in the window and you hear the birds. And the end of the day, if you listen, you're going to hear the day sounds shift to the night sounds.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
What's one thing your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
Well, I'm a first-generation immigrant, and my mom came here. She was born in a bomb shelter in 1940 in Glasgow, Scotland, one of nine, and she was very sensible and watch money and work hard and get an education and do this and do this. So I think a lot of my family was really focused on the basics of life. And I was out there for whatever reason in the fields taking hikes, climbing trees, looking at tadpoles and wondering how in the world they become, you know, a tadpole, a pollywog, and a frog. And what happens there, you know?
And why we don't say pollywog more often, because it's so fun.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
What's the one thing that you wonder about in nature? You see, well, you just told me one. Oh, how does the pollywog become a frog?
Well, I'm a big believer. What I went in 2015, I had some things going on in my life. And one day I got up and I said, I need to go to Costa Rica. And I said, why do I need to go to Costa Rica? But I just follow that voice that comes up every now and then. It's kind of weird. And people who know me go, all right, she had a feeling. I don't know why. I went there and replenished and restored in the rainforest for 10 days. And I realized, wow, this is it. If we didn't mess it up, it all works. There's animals there that we would see as dangerous that did not see me as food because they had enough food. So I realized then what I probably already knew. There's this vast system out there, and if we get out of the way, it works just fine. And we have to recognize that we are part of it. Within our bodies, there is a whole ecosystem going on there. If we go externalize it, we are part of this greater thing called the planet, and it all works beautifully. Lovely. It's people that try to control it and manipulate it and make it artificial, if you will. And that is the problem, the demand for that. So simplify your lives, people, and get out there and really connect. Nature is the best therapy. It is.
Yes. And we have a serious nature deficit disorder going on in our country. Mm-hmm. Final question. What's your favorite baby animal?
Oh, I love them all. There isn't an animal that I don't like. You know, some of them surprise you at times and you're like, ah, but no, they're all wonderful.
Well, Lorraine, you are basically a detective, a social worker, a political advocate, all rolled into one person. You have sacrificed a ton of your personal leisure time and rolled your sleeves up to learn just about everything PFAS chemical situations could possibly present. Clearly, you're not afraid of hard work or a difference of opinion. And you just keep working strategically to protect people and the earth from toxic chemicals. Thank you so much for doing the work you're doing and for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you so much for what you do.
It's a pleasure. It's fun to get to meet people like you.